Okay, thanks everyone for coming. Everton lighter, I like the new look.
I'm gonna hit a chair now.
Thanks everyone for coming. And in as we continue our discussion of emunah, bitachon, faith, trust in Hashem, reliance in Hashem, and just in general, as we're calling this series, living with Hashem. So one topic I'd like to explore, and it's actually a much more as much more diverse approaches than perhaps many others, but it's an important topic within this framework, and that's hashgacha pratis. Hashgacha on food supervision, but pratit is individual specific supervision, and this concept is spoken about a lot. It's a good concept to be aware of. It's good to know that Hashem is involved in the world. It's not, as Aristotle maintained and maybe other maintained as well, that Hashem or God created the world, but then doesn't involve himself in human affairs. He creates the world, and then that's it. And we know clearly we don't accept that. I mean, all we have to do is read the next couple of parshios. We see that Hashem is involved in history, is involved with the Jewish people, and is involved with individuals. But the question is, when we say that Hashem is involved in the world, so to put it one way, would we say that Hashem micromanages, or are there things that go on in the world that Hashem is not necessarily involved with or doesn't necessarily pay attention to? What do you think? Is Hashem involved with absolutely everything, or are there some things that Hashem kind of steps away from? Okay, so we'll take it from the more established examples of Hashgacha Pratis. Kriyas Yamsuf, splitting of the sea, right? Was Hashem sitting back, or was Hashem actively involved? Right, I think actively involved. What about a cat trapping a mouse in a forest? Did Hashem specifically orchestrate that the cat trapped the mouse, or did it just kind of happen without Hashem's involvement? What would you say, intuitively? Or do you think that within different things that happen in the world, is there any difference with Hashem's involvement? Is Hashem sometimes more involved, less involved, involved in different ways? No one. Okay, so we'll take a look at this, and I think these questions are not simple, and they're not necessarily so intuitive. It's we have to figure out what is it that the Torah tells us about this particular issue. And as I mentioned, one of the things that I found so fascinating about this is while we almost assume it as a very basic concept, it's not something that was necessarily viewed in the same way by different people in particular in different periods. And we'll see how it's changed, especially more recently, or at least how certain perspectives have become more prominent. But just as a general principle, as we said, we don't believe that Hashem created the world then sat back or retired and then let everything just play out. You know that Hashem is obviously involved in the world. And this is expressed in Tanakh, both in the stories in Tanakh, as well as we started to read, but especially as we'll read over the next couple of weeks, as well as in Chazal, in the Gemara. Just to pick one example, the Gemara in Chulin in number two in the source sheets, says that ain't other nokev etzbo milamata elim kain machrizin olav milamala, that a person doesn't injure his finger below in this world unless they declare about him on high that he should be injured. Right, you stump your toe, your finger gets stuck in the door. So it's saying it's not going to happen. It's not just an accident. that won't happen unless it's the creed from above. There's no such thing as chance. As it says in Tehillim, Mashem mitzadei gover konanu, that Hashem, that man's goings are established. That even his goings, even his example gives, if he injures his finger, stumps his toe, those are all from seemingly what the Gemara is expressing, is even those types of occurrences, which you think, oh, it's just me being, a klutz, that apparently if that's from Hashem, and it wouldn't happen if it wasn't, decreed or declared from above. So far, based on this, what would you think? That is Hashem involved? That's when, I posed the question, is Hashem involved to different levels in different aspects of the world? Meaning, you have one extreme, Kriyas Yamsu. But if a cat traps a mouse in the middle of a forest, is that Hashem orchestrating that, or is he involved in a more limited way?
It's limited.
So there's a difference. That's not all equal. All right, so Utcher said that there are differences. I'm glad you spoke if you have a shy audience. But there may be a difference that, but you could say based on this, it sounds like, well, actually I'll ask, do you think based on the Gemara that a person doesn't injure his finger unless it's decreed above, does that, based on that, it would seem that there's no difference. I would think that as well. Or if you look at many of the Rishonim, of the medieval commentators, and we'll see that it's, and I think it's a fascinating thing, that it seems that the perspective seems to either have developed or at least have been emphasized differently, as time went on. But if you look at the more medieval authorities, that seems to not be the understanding. And it may even seem foreign to us, to the ways that is usually described. Hashem is involved in everything. It even seems to not necessarily be consistent with the statement we find in the Gemara, that even a person injuring his finger is from Hashem. But look at the Sefer HaChinuch based on the Rambam, the Ramban, many, many others in that era. So we're talking, the 1100s, 1200s, 1300s, who addressed this issue. They, by and large, seem to take the approach that Hashem is not equally involved in every aspect of the world. And perhaps there are some aspects of creation that Hashem, really is not involved with. For example, the Sefer HaChinuch, and this is based on the understanding of the Rambam, he says that there are differences. It depends. When it comes to general, kol minei balei chayim, that in general, living things. So the level, so Hashem's hashgacha, Hashem's supervision, is only to the extent that a species will be maintained. Meaning, Hashem determined, let's say, a certain species would go extinct, and a certain species survive. According to the Sefer HaChinuch, that's the extent to which Hashem is involved with other living things.
Non-humans.
That it's just general. With that, Hashem, I don't know, for dog owners or, pet owners, it may be hard to think, but it sounds like Hashem is not, particularly involved or with, your specific pet or a specific animal out in the wild. His involvement is only to the extent that, Hashem wants, cats and dogs to not go extinct. So Hashem ensures it that they don't go extinct. And this is unlike his involvement, Right, so clearly there are cases that animals play a more prominent role and even take on, characteristics of people. We'll see, it may be a difference when it comes to the relationship with people. But at least animals, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, at least with animals in general, or other living things besides humans, Hashem is, it's only to the extent that the species will not go extinct. But when it comes to humans, so he says, that when it comes to humans, Hashem's supervision is on each and every one individually. And he understands all of their actions. So according to the Sefer HaChinuch, there's, and this was the 13th century, so there's a difference. There's Hashem over other creation, just his hashgacha, his supervision, to the extent that the species will or will not be maintained. But when it comes to humans, every individual is supervised. And mentioned the Rambam takes this approach, and the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim in number 4 says something that, again, I think in the way this topic is discussed in the contemporary world, it may seem a little bit foreign, but the Rambam says that when it comes to things like inanimate objects, so he says that Hashem really is not involved. And this is in the context of his trying to refute Aristotle, who maintained that God created the world, but then wasn't involved. So his whole argument is that, I know Hashem is involved in the world, but he said, I agree with Aristotle on this one point. I agree with him that whether a particular leaf has fallen, or a spider devoured this fly, or Reuven's spit came down and ricocheted down and a gnat and killed a gnat, or a fish snatched a worm, etc. So he says that's not really within under the supervision of Hashem, not in the particular involvement of Hashem. He says rather all things are the mikre gamor, that they all happen by chance. He says, kamo shechoshev aristo, just as Aristotle says. Right? Aristotle's whole premise was incorrect, but he was right about this one point. Is when it comes to these, inanimate objects, or even when it comes to the animals. So it sounds like the Rambam is saying, essentially, Hashem created the world, he set it in motion, and, he created the laws of nature. He created certain characteristics of animals, they hunt, etc. But he's not involved with whether this fish, eats this worm and the like. So, and again, this is not just the Rambam. In fact, even the Ramban, the Ramban has some, seems to suggest different things in different places, but the Ramban says that as well. He's commenting on in number 5, he's commenting on the pasuk that says ki yadativ, that I've known Avraham, that he's Hashem is establishing his commitment to his covenant with Avraham. And he says, ki yadativ, that I've known him. And that means that when Hashem says that I've known him, it means that I'm paying attention to him. I'm supervising him individually, more than for other forms of life. But he says also more than other types of people. He says even human beings are left to fend for themselves in this world against the circumstantial evil occurrences. He said, Adba Ace Pigudasam, until their time of accounting arrives. Meaning ultimately man will be judged, but, and even the Gemara says man is judged every day, but says for, sounds like, other than special individuals, people who the Ramban refers to as aval de chasidav, yasu me lav libel adas oso beprat, that these pious ones, Hashem directs his heart to know them or to supervise them individually. But the Ramban also says, even for people are subject to mikra, are subject to just the ways of the world. And it sounds like hashkacha pratis, you know, specific individual supervision seems to be reserved for only special individuals. So what do you think? Does that sound surprising or different from, you know, things that we've heard?
I mean, according to Ramban, and we should maybe daven once a year, I would think. I mean, you know, if everything's up to chance, what are the value of our tefillos?
So I think
they can't tell much of the bracha or pray for rain and good years.
So I don't think he's talking about within meaning. I mean, I think I would take it for granted that he's assuming the system of reward and punishment. And I think within that, it suggests a certain level of supervision. But whether, you know, someone encounters this circumstance or, you know, has this particular, you know, whether they stump their toe, it doesn't sound like for the average person, Hashem is as involved with that. It happens to be, I'm not sure they're connected, but it's an interesting point. The Ramban doesn't hold as an absolute obligation to daven every day. He says, you only have to daven when there's a need. Okay, you could say there's always a need. The Rambam holds you have a Torah obligation to daven every day. Anyway, just to clarify, when I say the Ramban, that means on a Torah level. But it's, and this is why I think this issue is, it is complex, because even if you were to take the approach that, okay, Hashem may not be involved in whether every individual stumps their toe, but, you know, as you said, if we daven, our deeds are being evaluated, so Hashem has to be paying attention to us. You know, it's not total withdrawal. So I have to see what exactly is the balance. And I think this could lead us to reconcile some of these views with some of the more maximalist views, the views that, no, Hashem is involved in every single aspect of the world. And I think just with mentioning of, you mentioned davening or mention of reward and punishment, so this could also be a difference between humans and other living things, that humans have free will, humans are capable of making choices, and therefore their actions are deserving of being judged. Whereas, you know, other types of life, you can't say they really have that. But, you know, that's what I would think. But the Gemara in Chulin in number 6 says that when Ryokanan would see a pelican snatching a fish from the sea, he would say, Mishvatecha tahom rabba, your judgments are like the great deep. And when he would see an ant, he would say, Tzidkoska kaharayel, that your righteousness is like the mighty mountains. Sounds like he's saying, you see, that when he sees a pelican snatching a fish, oh, your judgment, it sounds like the fish is in some ways being judged. In some ways, Hashem is choosing that, you know, now that fish should die deliberately. So, again, this does suggest a greater degree of supervision for even the animals. So, you know, we'll have to see how we can reconcile that with, you know, the Ramban, the Sefer HaChinuch, who say pretty clearly that when it comes to animals, Hashem is not necessarily involved. As opposed to here, the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan would interpret a pelican snatching a fish as basically a divine decree that the fish's life should come to an end. But that's basically the approach of many of the prominent Rishonim, the medieval authorities. And, you know, these are the most prominent, the Rambam, the Ramban, who disagree on other things, but seem to really take this approach that Hashgacha is not uniform and is applied differently to different people and to different forms of life. And when it comes to animal life, the Hashgacha is relatively limited. But if we fast forward a couple of centuries, we see in particular with the advent of Chassidus, and actually the same approach was taken by the Vilna Gaon, we see a what looks like a shift, at least, to a very, very strong perspective that every single thing that happens in the world, to an animate, inanimate, every single thing is controlled specifically by Hashem. Hashem is paying attention to every single detail. And just one example, but this is among many, and it's basically the uniform approach within Hasidus, and I think that's why this is such a prominent approach that exists nowadays, is, for example, Menachem Mendel of Vitebsk in number 7 says that a person, and he's quoting, it's very compelling, he's quoting from, basically quoting from the Gemara, so a person doesn't stub his finger, but he says, no blade of grass withers or is uprooted and no stone is thrown, except in the time and a place fit for it. And he says, the ancient tenua gadolu katana, there's no movement large or small, then at simtzum arishon, from the first contraction of creation, meaning that's the most significant movement, the first contraction of creation, of his essence, the simtzum, when Hashem, so to speak, contracted himself to allow room for the world, there's no difference between that and even to the lowliest creatures on the face of the earth and beneath it. Since it's all the chol meito yisbarach, that's all from Hashem, kvi chachmaso b'shmo l'chvodo, according to his wisdom, according to his, and in order to reveal his godliness and wisdom and mercy into the world. So is every single thing from the blade of grass growing is orchestrated individually by Hashem. So, you know, how do we reconcile these approaches? You know, we're all looking at the same Torah. We all have the same basic and fundamental beliefs. So do you have any ideas of how to, we could reconcile these approaches, the approach of the earlier authorities who say that when it comes to other life forms, there's not this direct hashgacha, as opposed to, and with the later authorities who seem to assume that every single thing that happens in the world, from the growth of a little blade of grass, is all orchestrated by Hashem.
How do you reconcile the Amoraim with the Rishonim? I'm all right. I mean, here, Hanina and Rabbi Yochanan seem to be very much of the approach of the Achronim.
Right. So you're saying that the approach of the Achronim seems to be more grounded in the Gemara. Right. It does seem to be compelling. But if you were to look at the approaches of the authorities themselves, the Rambam, the Ramban, and the later authorities, think there's any way to reconcile them, or they're just at odds? So I want to present an approach I saw in Rav Usher Weiss's book dealing with this issue. And but again, just to note that the approach of really hashkacha pratis, not just being, as the Ramban says, on maybe certain special individuals, or just in general being for humans, but other forms of life are, you know, basically more of a general hashkacha. So meaning that, and that approach is in some sources even rejected, you know, quite strongly, even though it's an approach that was held by, you know, the Rambam, the Ramban. Meaning, we're not talking about marginal sources, but the Munkat Sherebi, the Minchas Elazar in number 8, but speaks strongly about this. He says that there's a book Shomri Emunim, which I think was just translated, which gives a, you know, introduction to Torah's Hanistar, to the hidden Torah. And he says, in the book, he talks about Hashgacha, but the Minchas Elazar says that tells the reader to that he should skip over this part, and that they're forbidden to read. And he says, otherwise, it's a good book. But he says, may his master forgive him for this mistake, because he formulated his approach to hashgacha that was more similar to that of the early authorities. So you could ask, how could it? Rav Asher Weiss does ask. You know, it seems kind of harsh to say that approach is, you know, at odds with fundamental beliefs. He says he runs counter to our faith. It's hard to say that. You have the Rambam, the Ramban, the Sefer Chinuch, as well as others. But you see how prominent the approach of Hashem has hashgacha and always exacts his hashgacha on every single thing, from the greatest people to the inanimate objects. So, you know, I want to present Rav Asher Weiss's approach of trying to reconcile these views. So already with the Chaim Halberstam of Sanz, the Sanz Rav, the Divrei Chaim, he already tries to reconcile these approaches. Actually, Rav Asher Weiss is a Kleisenberg of Chassid. Kleisenberg Rebbe was a direct descendant of Sanz Rav. And actually, Rav Asher Weiss notes that the Divrei Chaim, unlike many other great figures in Chassidus, learned the Mor Nevuchim of the Rambam and was very in favor of it, held it in very high regard. Whereas others in among the masters of Chassidus more discouraged the learning of Mor Nevuchim. He just points it out that Divrei Chaim did learn Mor Nevuchim and was a proponent, at least for some people, to learn it. But he tries to reconcile the view of the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim. Again, as we saw, the Rambam says that he's on that point, he agrees with Aristotle. And when it comes to, you know, the inanimate objects or even life forms other than humans, Hashem set the laws of nature in motion and allowed them to play out. But the Rav Chaim says that, and that he says, like Usher says, that, you know, you have sources in Chazal that say that even a bird is entrapped except by the decree of God. So he says that is really the accepted approach. But he tries to reconcile the approaches, or says maybe it could be that the approaches don't conflict with one another. Because as I think Usher said, Usher gets the benefit because he's in person and he's participating, but as Usher said, what about our involvement? What about reward and punishment? What about if we say, like this was commented on the Ramban, who says that, you know, that Hashem may not be so intimately involved with every person until they're judged. Okay, but what about that? What about their reward and punishment? What about when it comes to them? So the Divrei Chaim says that this could be the explanation. And he says that, so all of creation is for the sake of man, and mankind as a species doesn't need all the creatures. He says, even if we don't know exactly how and what, the truth is that there's nothing unnecessary in creation, and what appears to be unnecessary also serves some purpose for man. This can be seen in numerous places. And he says that everything exists for the sake of man, and man's every aspect and need is overseen in detail. Hence, everything is likewise supervised as it pertains to him. Right, we saw from the Sefer Achinuch, and we see the Ramban, the Rambam say that, okay, when it comes to animal life, when it comes to inanimate objects, so then maybe you could say Hashem isn't supervising it directly. And so the Divrei Chaim says, even if you were to grant that, or maybe we do grant that, but the fact of the matter is, everything in creation is created for man. So if Hashem is supervising man, so you can make the argument that by extension or by necessity, everything that man comes into contact with is also subject to Hashem's supervision. maybe you could say that a, you know, a giraffe out in the wild may have less of the supervision than a giraffe who's, you know, you're encountering at the zoo. But according to the Devar Chaim, you could say that maybe it's true that, you know, a dog barking in and of itself may just be the way Hashem created dogs. Maybe Hashem wants you to come in contact with that dog or take care of that dog to strengthen your midos of compassion or whatever it may be. That all these things, when it comes to people, so then it's already in the purview of Hashem's hashgach over people. So maybe, yeah, spitting and going up the air and dropping down may not be, if you were to take the Rambam's view, may not in and of itself be subject to hashgacha, but, you know, Reuven walks by and Hashem wants him to have that little bit of Yisurim and the spit, you know, falls on his head or falls on his shirt. So then, yeah, so then Hashem, you could say that that act of the spit falling was directed, you know, by Hashem to fall on Reuven. Does that make sense? That you could say inherently Hashem didn't direct his hashgacha towards non-humans, but the fact is everything that happens with non-humans can be said to affect humans. So therefore, in practice, Hashem's hashgacha is on everything. And this is also supported by, in earlier sources, the Radak and Rashi, this way of explaining it. And the Radak says that this is a debate among the sages. And again, he quotes the Gemara in Cholin that said that when Rabbi Yochanan would see a pelican snatching a fish, so he would say it's like the judgment for the fish, or he's the example he gives there, a lion devours a sheep. So some did understand that it could be a punishment from Hashem, but others say that there's no reward and punishment for any creatures other than man. But how do we understand, for example, like what Rabbi Yochanan said in number six, that when he saw an animal being trapped and eaten, that was a judgment for the animal. The Radak says that could be in connection with human beings, that there's something that animal being trapped or that animal being killed will affect human beings in some way. And one way that Rashi describes in number 11 is that, if you look at Rashi's second explanation, is that okay? A fish is eaten by another fish, or an animal is eaten by another animal. Okay, if you have a shortage of fish or a shortage of animals, or that could all affect humans. It could make their endeavors for sustenance more difficult. So maybe, yeah, it's a judgment against the animal, but it's really so that a person will be affected in the way that Hashem wants them to be affected. The Rashi does quote the first explanation in Rashi in number 11, when he says, so he says that it could be that Hashem prepared the pelican to execute and exact his vengeance from the fish of the sea, killing those that are destined to perish at this time. He says, he quotes that Lashon Mori, he wrote quotes that this is what he received from his Rebbe. So then there does seem to be this idea already in the, I said before that many of the prominent early authorities didn't believe or at least didn't write that Hashem has this divine providence on every single thing. It sounds like Rashi did, and Rashi, the vision that Rashi had was that yes, Hashem may exact vengeance in whatever way an animal would be deserving of that. Hashem may do it even independently of concerns for humans, though Rashi's second explanation is that even when an animal is judged, okay, why is it this fish and not another fish? Okay, Hashem maybe chose what has reasons for choosing, but could be that is, you know, really only in order to reward or punish humans. That if an animal is eaten, so it makes it harder for a human to catch them and to receive sustenance, and if it's not, so then it makes it easier. And I think there are also other distinctions. For example, the Ramban in number 12, his commentary to Shmos. So he says that we saw the Ramban before had said that even with humans, Hashem doesn't always pay specific attention to them. But look, he says here, she'ain lo adam chilek b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu atchenemen b'chol d'orinu v'kreinu, that Hashem, that the person doesn't have a share in the Torah of Moshe unless he believes that all of our affairs and all of our experiences are kulam nisim, that they're all miracles. The ein bahem teva minhago shel olam, and there's no such thing as nature and teva. There's no such thing as miracles or nature. That everything is miracles. Really, there's no distinction between a miracle and what we would call a regular natural event, because it sounds like they're all from Hashem. So what's the difference? Wait, but what about the fact that the Ramban said earlier that there are some things that Hashem is not as actively involved with? And the Ramban had said, in the first page, number 5, that it's only with his chassidim, with his pious ones, that he directs his heart and focuses his attention. So,
I mean, number 5 uses yedias, like yedia, knowing.
Right, and he uses that in the sense of hashkacha. He says, he goes, ki yedias Hashem, what's yedias Hashem? Shehi hashkachaso ba'olam ha'shafal. That his yediyah is his supervision. But then we can ask the question, what does it mean? I said Hashem lacking in knowledge of other things. So we'll get to Rashi Weiss's resolution of that. But it sounds here that the Ramban says that there's no difference between miracles and teva. There's really no such thing as teva, as nature, and the ordinary course of the world. That everything is like a miracle. So Rusher Weiss suggested that if you look, and I bolded it here, he says, the Ramban says, "Ein lo adam chelek b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu ad shenemin v'kol reinu," that all of our affairs make reinu, in all of our affairs and our experiences are miracles. Here he's talking about the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So what the Ramban could be saying is that true? Not he's not contradicting what he said in number 5, that even some humans are left to fend for themselves. But with everything that happens to the Jewish people, Hashem is intimately involved with. Whether it's things that we would consider a natural experience for the Jewish people, or Kriyas Yamsuf, when it comes to the Jewish people, Hashem provides additional hashkacha, and within that additional hashkacha, there's no difference between what we call the miraculous and what we call the natural. So that's at least one way to harmonize two places where the Ramban on the surface suggests different things. But according to this understanding, it could be the Ramban is saying that when it comes to the history of the Jewish people, everything is innate. Everything is a miracle. Everything is hashkacha pratis. When it comes to people in general, maybe you can see this, the Jewish people are an extension of Hashem's chassidim. It says, Ramban said in number 5, "Avach has bechassidov yosim elav libo ledas osav prat," with his pious ones. So the Jews are his chosen nation. So when it comes to them, everything in their history is hashkacha pratis. When it comes to the world in general, so there's more of an hashkacha klalis, more of a general provenance. But when it comes down to it, I think we've touched upon it a little bit. When it comes down to it, how could there be much of a difference? If Hashem is all knowing, if Hashem is all powerful, so what does it mean to really say that there is a difference in hashkacha? In certain things, Hashem has hashkacha. For certain things, he doesn't. Hashem created the world. Hashem is all-knowing and is all-powerful. So what's the difference, fundamentally? So even the Rambam, who said that certain events within nature that at least don't affect humans aren't subject to Hashem's hashgacha, but I think helps us understand this point is, what about the fact that Hashem has knowledge of everything and Hashem is all knowing? That's a fundamental belief about Hashem. So the Rambam says, and the Rambam and the Ishbitzer in number 14 say that when it comes to knowledge, so our knowledge is external to us. We don't have any intrinsic knowledge. We, through our experiences, through experience, life experiences, through learning, we find out new things. But there's no knowledge that's necessarily intrinsic to us. It's all extrinsic. It's all learned. When it comes to Hashem, his knowledge is essential. Hashem and his knowledge are one and the same. And in case you think that this is confusing or doesn't really make sense, the Rambam says that it's not within the human's capacity to understand this. So because here it actually is talking about Hilchos Teshuva, he's talking about how it could be that a person has free will, but Hashem knows the outcome. So he says that this question is greater than the sea. And he says, "V'ein daito shall adam yichol hasik davar zeh al burio," that a person is not able to attain understanding of this. It's parenthetically the Raiva that then comments on the Rambam. So why did he get into it? In general, he opens up a can of worms. Then he tries to explain it. But that could, if we want to know, well, how could it be that Hashem, is all knowing, but we say that he's not involved in everything. So it must be that Hashem is all knowing and knows about everything. And that's comes to Rav Asher Weiss's summary of the issue, which was very helpful. He says that when it comes to the essence of hashgacha, there are three categories. There's hashgacha of knowledge and awareness, hashgacha as a form of reward, and protective hashgacha. So when it comes to the hashgacha of knowledge and awareness, so that's absolute and applies equally to every aspect of creation. The smallest blade of grass, to every blow of wind, Hashem's knowledge, awareness, and power is absolute. And that is that everyone would agree. And here, Rav Asher Weiss is, and I think he does so compellingly, really tries to harmonize the different views. I'm not sure that everyone would, but here he basically harmonizes the different views that they're talking about different aspects. So on one hand, Hashem's hashgacha of knowledge and awareness is absolute. He knows everything. He's aware of everything that he created. And that's absolute. But then you have other types of hashgacha. And you can see, even in the ways that hashgacha was described, it was used slightly differently in different contexts. He said that you have hashgacha as a form of reward. Meaning, when a person does what they're supposed to do, so Hashem will orchestrate events to be for a person's benefit. If a person doesn't do what they're supposed to do, so Hashem will orchestrate events to be to his detriment. And that's because it was pointed out that there's no real basis to judge living things that don't have free choice, or at least the less free choice if they don't have free choice, the judgment is less will be less profound, will be less specific. So you could say that on one hand that there's Hashem knows about everything. But when it comes to reward, when it comes to I'm going to, and this was what the Ramban was commenting on with Avram Avinu. Avram was so loyal to me. I'm going to ensure that his descendants will be preserved. So that's hashgacha, but that's hashgacha's reward. So that's not necessarily a enhancement of Hashem or increase in Hashem's awareness of what's going on. That's absolute. But when it comes to Hashkacha's reward, so Hashem will provide additional supervision, will orchestrate in a more direct way to reward or to punish those capable of free choice. And then there's similar to that, there's the protective Hashkacha. Hashem will ensure that someone will be safe or that a nation will be safe. And that's something that's not applied equally. So, you know, when it comes down to it, again, this was maybe a little bit more, you know, philosophical than some of the other topics, but I think it's important to note that Hashem is involved in every aspect of our lives. And you know, to know that there is a range of perspectives on the extent to which Hashem is involved with living things or with the world in ways that don't affect humans. But we see especially in more recent times, and maybe heard suggested, maybe Hashem's Hashkacha in more recent times has become a little bit more direct. Maybe that is the way that we're meant to relate to this.
Does anybody else agree with the Ramban? He seems to be a...
In what sense?
Just the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, they're more, they say that when it comes to humans, when it comes to Klal Yisrael, then Hashkacha.
Right.
But not with, you know, the leaf and the branch and the frog. That is more of a, right, he's less involved.
Right.
But clearly they both say that, you know, you say, Rama says, I agree with Aristotle, not plants and spiders and different things. But he says, you know, that obviously, I mean, he doesn't say straight out.
Because even with people, there's a little.
The Rama.
That they're subject to, that they can be subject to chance. I mean, here the Ramban is really emphasizing Avram's...
The Rambam doesn't say... He's just talking about... He's talking about non-humans, right?
Right.
So I'm assuming that with humans, he believes that there's more of a divine intervention.
Right.
Sefer HaChinuch as well. He talks about non-human.
Right. I think Sefer HaChinuch is saying when it comes to humans, there's Hashkacha.
Rambam, it seems to be a standout in his comments saying that not with all humans, unless
it's, or it says even some gamine Adam who nothing but the mikra, right?
He seems to be
that sometimes they're let loose a little bit. Right. And I think it's even more striking the fact that the Ramban in general's approach to miracles is that there's no difference between miracles and teva, miracles and nature. So, right, it sounds like that the Ramban does say that even when it comes to humans, there's a little bit more,
like a bit of a lone.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you have to see what extent he's saying that they're really cut loose. Is it that they're from the fact that there is this ace pekuda sum that they're brought to judgment means that they're, you know, and what are you going to judge on based, other than what a person has done, the situations that they've been in? But maybe the level to which their actions are, I'm going to say dictated, but are monitored maybe less. But I think this is why, and this is why Rav Asher Weiss's explanation was compelling, because you still, at the end of the day, have to say that, okay, maybe the fact that they're brought to judgment means that Hashem knows every action that they did. Otherwise, what's he going to judge on? But maybe it could be that the Ramban would say that, you know, for an average Joe, if I, you know, stump my toe on the door, so is it necessarily that Hashem caused that door to go on my toe? And you could say, maybe it's not the door inherently, but Hashem wanted to be a certain kapara. Hashem wanted me to have certain suffering. So again, that's like the Radak, who says that maybe in it, and the Divrei Chaim says maybe in it of itself, Hashem isn't involved with those things, but in ways that it affects humans, Hashem is involved. But yeah, no, it's a, it is a subject with some, at least on the surface, differences of opinion. But I think at the end of the day, we do see that Hashem is aware of everything. Hashem is all knowing. Hashem is all powerful. And I think in particular, when it comes to us, it is, I think, productive to view everything that happens as a way that, and this is very grounded, I think, in Chazal, that view everything that happens as a way to evaluate our deeds. Like Mara says, if Yisurim come on a person experiences suffering, they should reflect on their actions. So everything that happens could be a cause to reflect on one's actions, to try to find lessons within it. Doesn't mean we necessarily know, of course not, but I think it is both helpful for our own self-improvement, as well as sometimes, you know, it can help us become a little bit less frustrated with the different situations we encounter. You know, I lose my keys, I stub my finger. Okay, maybe there's something Hashem wants to tell me. Maybe there's something I should do differently. So if we can use everything as a springboard for self-improvement, so that could be very healthy. Mitzvah Hashem, next week, going on this idea, I want to explore a question, and there's a lot on it. And really, when you think about it, it's difficult to entirely wrap your head around. Is, can a person do anything that Hashem doesn't want? I mean, can any action happen without Hashem allowing it to happen? So on one hand, if we say that Hashem is all-knowing and all-powerful, so maybe say not. On the other hand, Hashem gives us free choice and expresses that he doesn't desire certain actions. So if certain actions are undesirable to Hashem, but Hashem allows them to happen, so does that mean that Hashem wanted it to happen, allowed it to happen? And is it possible that a person can do anything that Hashem doesn't want or didn't will to happen? So if you want to hear a little bit about that, well, God willing, discuss that next.